For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. UVA announces its new president, the ninth in its history. Anthem changes its mind, says it will offer health insurance plans in Virginia under the ACA. And a new threat to the ongoing recovery of the bald eagle population in Virginia. This is the WMRA Daily for Monday, September 18.
Support for the WMRA Daily comes from Blue Ridge Community College. When you earn a two-year associate degree, transferring to a four-year college is possible through their guaranteed transfer agreement programs. More information at brcc.edu.
The University of Virginia has named a new president. The university's Board of Visitors unanimously approved the selection of James Ryan on Friday. Ryan is the dean of the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He will be the ninth president of UVA. Ryan has worked on education law and policy. He also has taught and written about constitutional law, local government law, and U.S. Supreme Court litigation. In 2010, he published a book titled 5 Miles Away, A World Apart, which explored school segregation and inequality in Richmond and Henrico County. Also, Virginians are no longer at risk of not being able to buy health insurance on their own next year. Health insurer Anthem announced on Friday that it is reversing its decision to pull out of the federal health insurance marketplace created by the Affordable Care Act and will offer plans in 68 cities and counties. Anthem said it made the decision after another health insurer announced earlier this month it was pulling back out of some Virginia markets next year, leaving about 60,000 residents of several counties and cities in Virginia with the prospect of not having any plans to buy next year. A small rally of neo-Confederates at the Lee Monument in Richmond was overwhelmed on Saturday by hundreds of counter-protesters. As Mallory Nopain with Virginia Public Radio reports, police had prepared for the worst, but the event ended quickly and peacefully.
A pro-Confederate rally that had been scheduled for 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. ended before noon when the ralliers left early. About a half a dozen of them spent an hour waving Confederate flags and shouting back and forth with hundreds of counter-protesters.
One flag! One people! One country! 1873!
Officers were out in full force and had sectioned off assembly areas around Richmond's Robert E. Lee Monument. Richmond resident Ian Dunwoody came out to counter-protest.
At every point, access point to the monument, there were minimum 10 to 20 cops, and they're all like super polite and helpful and not discouraging at all. It was actually pretty pleasant out here today.
The avenue remained shut down for much of the day. There was an almost picnic-like atmosphere among the lingering counter-protesters. In the afternoon, a group took to the streets and marched. Four were arrested for wearing masks. In Richmond, I'm Mallory Nopain.
And Craig Carper with our partner station WCVE in Richmond was there as well. He spoke to some of those who attended.
Edward Perry of Northside, a black man wearing a Trump hat, openly carried a handgun to the event and supported the Confederate organizers.
I'm from the South. I'm from Virginia. I'm just like Lee. I stick with Virginia. I think the law says you can't take this statue down, right? Let's see what happens if they obey the law.
Katie Johnson and her friends, also from Richmond, made 800 flowers out of coffee filters and handed them out to attendees.
There's no room for hate in our city, and we want to express that in a creative way. And that was a great way that was also symbolic. You know, it's been done by groups in the past in Nazi Germany and the White Rose movement. It's a symbol of peace and love.
The neo-Confederate demonstrators left 50 minutes into their planned 8-hour event. Counter-protesters stayed but dwindled until police cleared the area hours later. Craig Carper, WCVE News.
Finally, 40 years ago, bald eagles were in danger of extinction, but they've made a great recovery, and theirs is considered an endangered species success story. But as they spread across Virginia in search of new habitat, they are finding some free lunches that are actually quite costly. WMRA's Christopher Clymer-Kurtz reports.
When Curtis Blosser goes hunting, or just out to shoot on his family's Rockingham County farm, he certainly doesn't intend to kill bald eagles, even when his gun works.
All right, Dad. Your gun doesn't work!
He said that hunters are conservationists who love the wild.
This one's gonna be loud!
But hunters may be partly responsible for a problem that is harming eagles. Lead poisoning, not from being shot, but from bullet remains, lead fragments.
You ready?
I've never heard of this before. So I just started talking to my buddies at Hunt, and we were like, man, how can this happen?
The vast majority of the bald eagles we get, and that's 35 to 40 birds a year, the vast majority have lead in their bloodstream.
Ed Clark is the president and founder of the Wildlife Center of Virginia, a training hospital for wildlife near Waynesboro. He published a paper on lead toxicity in raptors, which include bald eagles.
People just don't get the connection. They have the idea that, okay, I'm going to go hunt deer. I shoot the deer. There's an entry wound. There's an exit wound. The bullet's gone out. It's in the ground someplace. No problem. I'm not responsible. What people don't recognize is that the average rifle bullet, as an example, loses about 30% of its weight as it passes through the deer or the other game animal. And those little shards of lead, a piece the size of a grain of rice, is enough to kill a bald eagle. And it's there. It's definitely there.
A lot of hunters field dress their quarry, gut out the organs, and leave them out in the woods to decompose or for scavengers, which can include bald eagles.
Those remains left in the field carry little toxic time bombs. Lead is a toxic substance, and the trouble is it builds up. So if they get a little bit this year and don't get any until next year, what they got this year is still in them when they get the next dose. And so eventually it'll compromise or kill the bird.
At his dining room table, Curtis Blosser comes to grips with Clark's concerns.
If they're finding fragments, it's definitely, I mean, you can't make up a fragment.
Blosser works construction jobs for much of the year, but in the fall months and into January, he travels a lot to Wisconsin, New Jersey, Kentucky, even Mexico and elsewhere, filming hunts for television hunting shows. He said that in professional hunting, deer aren't gutted in the woods for the sake of pictures and mess. That's not how he was raised, though.
That's like the ritual. Like you kill your first deer, and my dad is looking over and hands you your knife. He says, all right, son, you killed a deer. You got it. This is part of it.
Blosser's guess is that the lead fragments that raptors consume aren't coming solely from the remains of deer killed by bullets from high-powered rifles.
Like groundhogs, skunks, possums, anything that a farmer sees, you know. I mean, we shoot groundhogs all year long. We usually use 22s, and most of the times that will not go through the animal.
Clark said that 22 bullets, which are often pure lead, can be even worse than high-powered rifle bullet remains. But he also said that when he maps out the data across a calendar, he sees a direct relationship between the incidence and frequency of lead toxicity and hunting season. Blosser also suspects that some hunting methods, more than others, result in higher amounts of lead available to scavengers.
East of the Blue Ridge, a lot of counties allow use of dogs when deer hunting. You run them like bear. And a lot of times you use shotguns with buckshot.
So that'd be a lot more lead.
And so that'd be a lot more lead.
In 1991, the federal government banned lead birdshot for waterfowl hunting, but recent attempts to ban lead bullets have served only to polarize public debate about guns and hunting. The outgoing Obama administration issued a last-minute directive against using lead bullets on federal lands, which the Trump administration promptly overturned. Given the polarization of that public debate, Clark thinks that the lead toxicity problem in raptors can be dealt with more surgically, by hunters, voluntarily. They just need to use copper instead of lead bullets when they're actually out hunting, or bury or carry away the dead animal remains so birds can't get them. Getting hunters to do those things may be an uphill battle.
Yeah, I tell you what, as far as like the all copper and all that, it hasn't really caught on around here.
Ron Shiflett is the sporting goods manager at the Rockingham Cooperative in Timberville.
Like everybody else, it's kind of not converting over unless somebody actually wants them, we'll order them. But as far as stocking them, we're not doing that right now. Because of the clientele of people.
Why not they want them?
It's because it's tradition. They've just been using this type of bullet all the time.
As for not leaving the field dressings from deer out in the field?
They'd have to fight with me for I take a tub of guts home.
Ed Clark said that in hunter safety training, hunters are taught that they are responsible for each bullet they shoot from the time they pull the trigger until it stops. But that's not quite good enough.
We simply need to amend that to say you're responsible for your bullet from the instant you pull the trigger and it leaves the gun, even after it stops moving. That's the nuance.
Nuanced or not, fall deer hunting seasons are just around the corner. For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer-Kurtz.
You can learn more at our website, WMRA.org. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for joining me. Enjoy your Monday.